I'm always looking for ways to bring in different topics to the podcast. In this episode of High School Counseling Conversations, I'm bringing on Sarah from The Responsive Counselor to talk about research. Now, before you run the other way, consider that you, maybe like me, have a lot to learn on this topic. Sarah covers four big categories of types of research by explaining what they mean and then telling us what implications they can have in school counseling programs. It's so relevant to the direction that comprehensive school counseling is headed, and I learned so much from our conversation. Let me introduce you to Sarah before we get started. After 10 years of working as an elementary school counselor, Sarah devotes her time now to serving other school counselors. She's passionate about effective counseling and SEL resources, relevant professional development, research-based practices, and Taco Bell. When Sarah isn't working in the counseling world, she's spending time with her husband, two sons, and two dogs. Or you can find her binge-watching TV, or reading, or redecorating rooms in her house. Now, let's listen in on our conversation. High School Counseling Conversations is a podcast where we talk about exactly that, a casual potpourri of school counseling topics intended to grow us as school counselors, but also give us space to enjoy each other's company. I'm Lauren from Counselor Click, and I'm sharing my experiences and perspectives as a high school counselor. No topic is off limits, and I'm certain we'll cover it all. I'm your high school counseling hype girl, here to help you energize your school counseling program and remind you of how much you love your job. Whether you're just getting your feet wet as an intern or you're nearing retirement, you'll feel like you're just popping in to catch up with your school counseling bestie. Let's go. Hey, Sarah, welcome to the show. I'm so glad that you're here.
Hello, hello. Thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be joining you.
I think you're my first elementary specialist coming in to bring some knowledge to the high school counselor. So that's a fun difference.
Represent elementary.
Yes. I'm always trying to think, how can I take someone who has an expertise somewhere else and cater it to this audience? So tell us a little bit about your background in schools and working with students and kind of what you're up to now.
Sure. I first, after grad school, started as a school-based therapist. So I was contracted by a community mental health agency into an elementary school. And there was a lot that I loved about it, but I very much so wanted to serve the whole school population and be able to do some preventative work. So I transitioned into the role of a school counselor. First, briefly at a middle school, which I was terrible at, and then finally landed in elementary, which is much more where my strengths lie. So I worked as an elementary school counselor in Metro Nashville Public Schools off and on for 8 years. And at some point during that time, I realized that what existed in the world for elementary school counselors to use for groups and individuals and class lessons was not a match for my students. My demographics, being in this century, just wasn't a fit. And so I started creating all of my own resources, and eventually it started blogging and sharing about these things, and eventually started putting them on my website and on Teachers Pay Teachers, and eventually kind of became the responsive counselor. So a lot of people don't know my first name. Hi, I'm the responsive counselor. My first name is actually Kara. And that is what I spend most of my time doing now, is serving other school counselors and teachers through creating social emotional learning and school counseling resources.
Awesome. Thanks for that. I have seen you talk a lot about this broader topic of best practice versus research-based interventions versus evidence-based interventions. And I feel like I don't have a deep knowledge of all of those things. And so I wanted to bring you on to talk about that, about the research you've done with that and how it has played into the way you develop resources for students. And I have lots of questions about it. So will you kind of just give us a brief overview of like those three categories before we get a little deeper?
Sure. And I will actually throw in a fourth category as well.
Okay.
You know, I think words are important, and a lot of people, including people in, you know, central office and school districts, are using these terms interchangeably. So let's define them. Let's talk about what each of them means, what it doesn't mean, and then also maybe what those actually look like some examples of each of them, if that works for you.
Yes, let's do it.
Okay, so best practice can really be applied to anything by anyone. It is often rooted in science or theory, but it doesn't have to be, because sometimes it's also just what somebody has personally experienced success with. I would say anything that you see in the monthly Ask A magazine that Ask A members receive, that's best practices, because that is the leading expert in our field, what they are sharing. So those things are considered best practices. Then if you step it up a level, we've got research-based. Research-based means that there are components or elements of what we're talking about that have been studied and found to be important, effective, valuable. But the exact thing we're talking about in its entirety has not been scientifically rigorously evaluated. And then we've got evidence-based interventions. So that is like the gold standard, the unicorn, the what we really want everything to be, but realistically, it's not going to be. An evidence-based intervention is something that has been scientifically evaluated using the scientific process and found to be statistically significantly effective. Oftentimes, we expect those studies to be published in peer-reviewed journal articles, but sometimes it might be a dissertation or a thesis that we find it in. There's some organizations also that say for something to be considered an evidence-based intervention, that study also has to be replicated. So it has to happen more than once that somebody researches it and finds it. You can imagine it's kind of hard to meet that, right? And to get that label of being an evidence-based intervention when it requires all of that.
Yeah.
The fourth thing is this idea now of evidence-based practice. And that is actually the language that we're seeing coming out of ASCA more. Evidence-based practice is putting some of these things together. So it's starting off with information and data about your students and their needs, taking what we know from the research and taking research-based practices, and then implementing an intervention, evaluating it, tweaking it, deciding, did this work for my students? Does it need to have some edits made to it? That is evidence-based practice or evidence-based school counseling. And so that is really what we should be striving for, according to ASCA, is using the research to inform what we're doing while also collecting some of our own data to determine if it's working for our caseloads, our students.
Okay, that makes so much more sense to me that you explained it that way and that you added in that fourth category, because just hearing them all, I think like they all jumble kind of together in my brain. And I'm like, okay, this research, this is evidence. Like it sounded a little confusing to me, but did you say evidence-based practices? Is that correct?
So sometimes it's evidence-based practice, like a verb, like what we do evidence-based practice or evidence-based school counseling.
Okay. And you said that you're seeing that a lot more now. Like ASCA is using that term as like, that is the best practice. We're taking the data, we're taking the evidence, we're taking the research, kind of putting it together, seeing how it goes and using our data and then taking our next steps because of like out of that.
Absolutely. 100%. And I think it's because although in an ideal world, everything we do would be an evidence-based intervention, the truth is that research is limited in the school counseling world.
I was going to say, who is doing that research? Like, there's not much of it.
There's not a ton that really directly applies. I think all the time, what I hear and read from school counselors is they're wanting, hey, I'm looking for some research that says, like, do this, not that. Okay, that's what we want. And the truth is that doesn't really exist, at least not yet, and not as directly. So research in our field, it's limited. It's limited partly because the IRB, the institutional review boards that have to give their seal of approval on studies, you know, they're going to look a lot closer at any research that's conducted with minors and in school counseling. It all involves
that's all of it. Yeah. Right?
There's also logistical issues because we would be talking about a university, school districts, and families kind of all having to collaborate together to make a research project work. I don't think there's as much funding for school counseling outcome research as we'd like. And also something that I've personally noticed as I've really tried to dive into the research that exists and doesn't exist is that faculty who are conducting research in school counseling programs, you know, their interests what they are choosing to research might not align with what some of us are really hoping for. So a lot of the faculty research coming out of programs is focused on clinical counseling, which is important and valuable, just doesn't always apply to us. There's a lot of research around counselor education programs and counselor supervision. Again, really important, but doesn't necessarily apply to what I'm doing in my school counseling program.
Right. The person doing that research, though, is probably that professor who's teaching those students who's like, yeah, well, this is what's in front of me. So this is what I'm going to do my research
on. Right. And it's about their own practices, right? And how they can be their best, how they can improve their program. Their program is just different. And there's also a lot of research about school counseling as a profession. You know, how are we perceived by other stakeholders? How do we perceive ourselves? Things around that. And so there's just not as much that is directly applicable. There's not then a lot of evidence-based interventions that are specific to the work of a school counselor. And so I think that some of the part about evidence-based school counseling is, hey, we don't have these EBIs that we can pull from. What can we do to still make sure that what we're doing is impactful and successful? And I think the other piece that's really valuable about it is acknowledging that schools are different. They vary widely. Caseload size, demographics, the languages that your students are speaking, all of these little things can make a difference in whether or not an intervention is effective. And I think evidence-based school counseling, evidence-based practice really incorporates that because it's about looking at your school's needs and evaluating after the fact if it was actually a good match.
Totally. I was going to say, like, thinking about all those schools being different, even if you took an evidence-based intervention that did so well under this science experiment, basically, you throw in so many more variables when you bring it to your school. I mean, that is, nothing is the same about the group that you're doing that with, or like you said, the stakeholders who are or who are not supporting you in that. So it's like, how could you expect it to, the outcome to be this awesome outcome if you couldn't? You just couldn't expect to have the same outcome. So
yeah, a great example of that is the Olvais bullying prevention program. There's a period of time where all of the schools were talking about Olvais. Everybody was doing it because it was considered an evidence-based intervention. And in the country that it was implemented in and it originated in, it was super successful. But when they started to research how it actually worked out here in the States, it was not working so well because there's just cultural differences that are involved when we're talking about human behavior and pre-adolescent and adolescent development and all of that. So it was an example of something that, you know, even if it was being implemented in with fidelity, the population it was being implemented with wasn't an exact match. And so we can't necessarily expect to have the same results.
Have you seen districts or counselors who run into this where someone says, hey, you can use interventions, we can pay money for a program, but it has to be evidence-based intervention? And then what do you say to that? Because like you said, it might be just that one that was done in another country that has that stamp on it, and that's my option. Like, what do you do when they say that?
Part of the thing is, I think, making sure that they are on the same page as their supervisor, their administrator, their superintendent, their, you know, counseling coordinator about what do they mean when they're saying it needs to be an evidence-based curriculum? Because I think if they're looking for an evidence-based intervention, a school counselor can say, hey, here is what exists in the world, and let me share with you how that might not be a great fit. So for example, a lot of the evidence-based group counseling curriculums that exist out there are like 12 to 50 sessions long, and incorporate parents, and our 50-minute sessions, and have these components that are just not as relevant, are just not as feasible, don't translate so well into the school setting.
You mean you don't do a 50-week group in a school?
I do not, personally. I think a special ed teacher might. I think a speech-language pathologist might, but a school counselor, not as much, right? I also think when it comes to tier one core curriculum, things like Second Step, they are not created for school counselors to implement. And the truth is, if you don't implement something with fidelity, the exact way that it was created and studied, we can't expect the same results. And so when we're trying to take a program that was created to involve daily reinforcement, daily activities and community meetings, Stanford Harmony is another example, that's really tricky for a counselor to do. And so I think there is a piece of just going back to that language, hey, all right, you said that you'd be willing to pay for an evidence-based curriculum. What do you mean by evidence-based? Are we talking about an evidence-based intervention, something that has been studied that I can find in a journal article? Or are you talking about something that is based on research and that is a match for the needs that I'm seeing in my students? Having that conversation about what exactly that looks like to make sure they're on the same page.
Yeah, I imagine that they would just be, I could see somebody just saying those words because that's what somebody higher up in the district said, or they read it on a piece of paper that said, this is what they'll pay for. And they're just kind of the middleman repeating it instead of digging a little deeper. So I think that's important for counselors to hear that you can ask questions about it. You don't just have to say, okay, I'm Googling evidence-based intervention and I can only use things on this list, because they might not be the best fit for you or your students. And so ask the questions to make sure that you're moving in the right direction, especially if they're going to spend money on something or you're going to be implementing something school-wide. You want to make sure it's a good fit for you and your students.
Exactly.
Are you looking for some resources to send your students home with over the upcoming Thanksgiving and winter breaks? Check out all of my digital resources. I've bundled them all together in one big digital mega bundle. Inside, you'll find 20 digital check-ins, activities, and interactive resources for your secondary students. Topics are comprehensive. They cover academic topics, social-emotional wellness, and college and career readiness. Get ready to reach all of your learners with these lessons, from the high achievers to your most disengaged students. Use these activities to teach skills and check in with your students' growth and mental health. When you buy all 20 together, you'll receive a 20% discount. So head over to counselorclick.com/digital mega to see all 20 digital resources. Now, back to the show. Okay, where do you see, this? You kind of covered this, like where do you see people using these terms incorrectly? Like, is it okay to call something best practice and to do things that are best practice in your school? Like, is it okay to not always be doing something that's evidence-based, but you're moving in the direction that you read something in an ASCA magazine and you're going to try something that's best practice?
I think yes, because I think we don't have a large enough kind of menu of things that have been labeled evidence-based interventions for us to pull from as school counselors. So I think we're starting a lot of times with what the research says or best practices. I think the piece that is, you know, being responsible or accountable is that if we're going to do something that hasn't already been studied, or even if it has, is that we do a little check-in ourselves and our school. Is this being effective, right? So whether or not that's conducting surveys with students or teachers, or it is diving into some of the, you know, assessment or attendance or behavior data before and after, I think that's the piece that is sometimes missing, but is the piece that can also help as we're having these conversations with administrators and central office is, hey, you know, this is something that I read about from the leading expert, you know, in school counseling. It hasn't been studied yet, but I put it into practice here and here were our results. So for us, this is an evidence-based practice.
So I'm hearing you say that best practice could kind of be like an inspiration to start your own data collection and evidence-based interventions or practices at your school. Like you could be inspired by the best practice that you read somewhere and you're like, okay, I'm going to dig a little deeper. I'm going to find some data around this. We're going to see how it works in our school and see how it goes from there.
Absolutely. I think it's a starting place. We're always just starting somewhere, right?
Yeah. Yeah. That's a good point. Okay. You mentioned that with evidence-based intervention, there has to be a lot of repetition. It sounds very scientific. So do you have specifics on what qualifies something to be evidence-based? It has to be done so many times or in this sort of setting, or what is that all about?
It depends a lot on who is applying that label. So different organizations have different criteria. The real gold standard would be two or more randomized control trials. So For example, if we were talking about a school-wide program, oh gosh, that's so tricky with schools, but it would be finding, for example, four schools that all have really similar demographics, really similar baseline data, and randomly assigning two to implement the program and two to not implement the program. Doing the program implementation, evaluating fidelity, and then collecting all of this data that then you are performing statistical analyses of and making a determination as to whether or not there was a significant difference between students at the schools that received the programming or intervention and students who didn't. And then taking that same kind of study, the same intervention, and doing it again and getting similar significant positive results. That's what would give you that like really beautiful, shiny, glittery unicorn stamp evidence-based intervention approval. But because that is so tough, right? And also really specific, sometimes it can just be any time that a study is conducted scientifically, right? So we're collecting baseline data, we're looking at before and after. Is there a significant difference in the data before and after we implemented this intervention? If yes, then yes, it's evidence-based.
Okay. And once somebody has gathered all of that, they publish it somewhere. Like, where do we go to find that information?
Great question. So if you are an ASCA member, then you have access to ASCA's Professional School Counseling Journal. And it's not one that gets mailed to you, but you can log in to your to ASCA and access it right from that website. So that is a great starting place, right? And everything in there is going to be school counseling specific. However, you are going to find a lot that's about counselor prep programs, supervision, and the profession. Although you will find some things that are actual interventions used with students, I use Google Scholar to find articles. Honestly, the tricky part is that a lot of us don't have regular access to, you know, we might not still be connected to our university and might not have access to those databases. But when I was preparing for a conference presentation and I had lost my own journal access, I actually found a website where they've kind of collected, scoured all of these journal articles that you can find them for free, which is really, really wonderful. So if I'm looking for research for something, I start with Google Scholar. And I'm typing in the words and I'm finding some articles that I think are a great fit. And then I'm going to a website called SciHub. That's SCI-HUB.SE.
Okay. We'll include that in the show notes too, just so that people can kind of go through your order of operations and follow the same
path. Yes. Cool. And then you put into that, you put the DOI address. So you can't put in the journal article, but if you're on Google Scholar, you find an article, you're like, I really need to read more. This looks really interesting. You just copy the DOI, which is a super long number. You paste it into SciHub. And I've had great success. Like over 90% of the articles I've been looking for, I've been able to find there.
Okay, this is like a secret. Like I would not know this. I did not know this. And no one listening would know this unless you were telling us this hack that you found to find the research. This is crazy.
I did a happy dance when I found it. There was like definite dancing in my office chair that I found a way to be able to actually access this, because otherwise these articles can cost like $35 a piece just to access.
And it might not even be what you're looking for. Yes. Like you're trying to figure out like, is this even the answer to what I'm looking for? Is this, you know, research on the topic I want? And you don't want to pay that if it's not going to be what right. you want.
I think it's really tough. I think there is what's called the research to practice gap, where we have this research and then we have people actually practicing as school counselors, and only some of that research actually trickles down to boots on the ground counselors. And sometimes it doesn't even come down until, you know, years and years after the research has been published. So I'm excited for there to be a way now for more of us to be able to access some of this research.
That is a huge challenge in helping us have the most, like you said, the evidence-based best practices. Like, how do we do that if we can't access it? That's a huge challenge. Have there been other challenges that you've seen for counselors to implement this stuff other than being able to find it?
So another one is that sometimes professors faculty members of a counseling program will come up with an intervention or some programming, a curriculum, and they will implement it and they'll do research on it and it will be found to be effective, but then it's not actually available anywhere. So that has been a frustrating. I once created a list of evidence-based group counseling curriculums, and someone that I, you know, gave to some people, and they were asking, I can't find this one. And so then I dove a little deeper and I found that although it was referenced in this journal article and it did exist, it's not something that was made available. And so that can be a little bit tricky as well.
It's like, here's what we've said is the best, but no, you can't have it.
Right, right. And sometimes they can be costly. So that is a little bit of an issue as well. You know, I find that evidence-based interventions, they come at a price and schools may or may not be able to afford those. So that can be tricky as well. I just remembered, I want to make sure that I share one other place that you can find some really good research that is related to what we do.
Yeah, tell us about it.
Okay. So University of Massachusetts Amherst, they have kind of an organization within them called CSCOR. It stands for Center for School Counseling Outcome Research and Evaluation. It is a lengthy name.
That's a mouthful.
Yeah. So CSCOR. And I will say that their website can sometimes be not the most user-friendly website in the entire world. However, it is absolutely a place to find where professors have taken relevant research, and sometimes you can find PowerPoint slides where they've gone through and they've shared, you know, kind of a yearly update. Here's some research that might apply. And that also really can spell it out, because I think what's tricky as well is if you did not take a lot of statistics and research courses in grad school, sometimes reading these articles and really understanding what some of the outcomes mean, that it can be hard. It can be something like you feel like you're reading something in a different language. And so one of the things that CSCOR does well is that not only do they, you know, actually have and share relevant research, but they also share it in a way that is very understandable and that helps you to kind of see this immediate application for yourself. Okay, what does that mean for me? What can be my takeaway?
That's awesome. Because I imagine, like you said, it feeling like a foreign language. And I mean, statistics wasn't easy for me when I did it in high school, undergrad, or grad school. So I would really need somebody walking me through, what does this mean and why is it important to me? Okay, Sarah, how can we or should we tie all of these together in our comprehensive school counseling program? Like, tell listeners who are very busy how they can incorporate this research based stuff when they don't really have time to go be like doing research.
All right, here are my recommendations. If you want to take some of these or all of these ideas and kind of put them into play as you are planning and implementing your comprehensive school counseling program, I think one is making sure that you are evaluating some of your own practices, programming, and interventions, because that is a core component of evidence-based school counseling, of evidence-based practice, of what we are trying to do, right? And no counselor has extra time, which means to me that we don't want to spend our time doing anything that doesn't have an impact, that isn't actually working. So with that in mind, a base level, evaluate your own program. This does not mean that I think you need to collect data on every single programming or intervention or small group or classroom SEL unit that you do, because you don't have to
go do it in four other schools and collect the data from that. Like, they don't need to go out and do their own evidence-based intervention.
No, you don't need to do that. But I do think that for programming or interventions that you either, one, feel really strongly about, two, that you think you might get some pushback about and you might need some data to back it up, or that three, you want to repeat year after year, I think you collect some data to evaluate, is it working? Was this a good use of my time, of my students' time, of my teacher's time, etc.? That's a huge part of evidence-based school counseling. So let's do that, okay?
That was such a good answer.
Yeah. Two, if you are an Ask a Member, then flip through that magazine that you get each month. Now, this is hard because it takes time. Here's what I think happens to some of us, though, is we say, I don't have time to read this. And so we just don't read it at all because in our minds, we think that reading it means reading it cover to cover. Okay, that is a lie. You do not have to read it cover to cover, right? It is a magazine. It is for you to pick and choose what interests you, what applies to you. And I think if we shift our mindset a little to just being, I'm going to flip through and see what grabs my eye, we can make time for that. That's a lot easier for us, right? So if you're a member, flip through it, see what catches your eye, see if there's a practice shared in there that was effective in someone else's building that you think might be effective for you that you want to give a try. I also think that a lot of counselors are in positions where we are needing to advocate for our role and for our programs. And I think anytime we have something written and published by someone else that we can share and say, hey, this is what the American School Counseling Association is saying about XYZ, I think that can be really helpful. So when you are, you know, choosing to spend some time to look into research-based practices, evidence-based interventions, et cetera, tell yourself this isn't just about me and my programming and coming up with new ideas. This is also about me being able to successfully advocate for my program and being able to do more of the things that I know actually reach students. So that's what I would share about for that. And three, if you love diving into this research and you think, I know, I want to spend an hour on Saturday on Google Scholar finding articles that relate to this intervention that I want to plan, and then I'm going to go to Sci-Hub and look them up. Okay, that's amazing and awesome, and we will probably be best friends now. Call me.
That's okay? What I was going to say. They get along great with you.
But maybe you don't, and that's okay. But you still kind of want to be exposed to more of these ideas. There are some of us who think this is fun and who enjoy spending time finding relevant research and sharing it. And so if you are someone that's on social media, maybe you want to follow some of us. So for example, me, Sarah, the responsive counselor, I like to share about what the research says, what that means for us, and how we can apply that. There's also a Facebook account called School Psyched, Your School Psychologist. And that account regularly shares articles that are talking about relevant research that applies to us as well. I would also say following NASP, the National Association for School Psychology, on Facebook, and I think Instagram as well, they share relevant research. I will say school psychology as a field tends to share a little bit more, I think, applied research, a little bit less on the profession and a little bit more like this works, this doesn't. So if you are like, hey, I think I like research, I think I want to infuse this a little bit more, but I don't know where to start, start by following organizations that are sharing this stuff in verbiage and language that is just more accessible, right? And a little bit more like you're scrolling and you're like, hey, that applies to me. And if you want to take it a little bit of a step further, I do think that CSCoR, that Center for School Counseling Outcome Research and Evaluation, is a great website to just peruse if you are just feeling really, really hype one day about research.
I can tell you, I don't know that I'm going to feel very hype. Like, I'm not going to wake up that morning and want to do that. But you gave us some really good places to go if we want more information, like after this podcast. So I appreciate that. And your answer to the whole last question there, like, how do we tie this all together and kind of what do we do now? Really just wrap this up with like a perfect little bow. So is there anything else we didn't talk about that you're like, this is important for people to know about all the research and the data?
Okay, can I share just really quick a handful of research findings that apply to all tiers? Kind of the research says.
Yes.
Okay, tell cool. Us. Okay, first, this will not shock anybody, but as it turns out, school counseling as a whole is effective. So there was a meta-analysis of 117 studies that evaluated school counseling outcomes, and they found that overall, students who receive school counseling interventions, that included class lessons, group counseling, and individual counseling, score a third of a standard deviation higher than students who did not receive a school counseling intervention. And although a third of a standard deviation does not sound very exciting, actually in the world of educational interventions, that's pretty decent. That's pretty legit. And the research that looked more specifically at caseload sizes, which they only did for high school and not elementary. Wah, wah, I know. Cool for you, high school folks.
Right, right.
They found some pretty important correlations that they said could lead to causation, where smaller caseloads were leading to even more favorable outcomes. in the school counseling world. So that's really exciting. It's not shocking.
That's very encouraging. You said that there is more research on that kind of broader scope. Is school counseling effective? And it's kind of just proving what we already know to be true. We're like, yes, thank you. What we do matters.
100%. Okay, here's another finding. So one of the things that we're seeing become really, really common in a lot of schools is restorative practices, which if it's something that you're interested in, you are probably really excited by, but it is an area where we are putting the cart before the horse. So schools have been implementing restorative practices before we really had great research on it. The good news is that school-based restorative practices show largely positive outcomes in the research. So it shows improvement in school climate, like increased sense of school safety, increased social, emotional, behavioral skills, and reductions in discipline referrals and exclusionary discipline practices. So restorative practices, the research is showing right now, it does work and is effective. So that's exciting.
And I bet there will be more research on that as time goes on, because kind of the same thing, people are seeing, okay, this is working. Let's start doing more research in it too, because if it's working well, we want to do more of it.
Absolutely. Here's another exciting research finding. The idea of name it to tame it actually works. So there is science backing up naming and labeling our emotions and how that can have a calming effect, how it can chill out our amygdalas and activate our prefrontal cortexes so we can think more logically and do some good decision making. And that's something that actually that research was done on young adults, undergrads, I believe. And so very much so applicable to high school, not just those of us working with the babies. Having our students label their emotions and also be able to label the intensity of their emotions is something that is a research-based practice. I got to check my own language there. So that's really important. And then the last thing, okay, as much as I love research that is actually about like do this and not that when it comes to working with children, I think we know that school counselor burnout is kind of a big deal right now. We are seeing more and more leave the field. We're seeing positions that are not being able to be filled. So I did find a study several months ago that examined school counselor burnout, and I thought it was really important because this is what they found. They found that high affective rumination, aka spending time ruminating and sitting in your negative feelings about work, when you do that and you're not doing any like problem solving, that leads to higher burnout and turnover, plus lower work satisfaction and engagement. Okay. So as much as like we want to lean into our feelings and process our feelings, actually just sitting in yucky feelings about work and not doing any thinking about what we could do to improve things makes things worse. Okay.
That makes a lot of sense.
It does. Here was the other thing though that has actually surprised a lot of people. The researchers looked at detachment, this idea of leaving work at work, and they found that it was not predictive of professional well-being, positive or negative. So this whole idea of like, when you go home, don't think about work, leave work at work. When you drive home, leave it in the car. You don't have to do that if you don't want to. That doesn't actually lead to lower burnout in any way. The idea is, though, is that if you're going to think about work, outside of work, if you are going to be a school counselor in your brain when you're at home, it should be around problem solving or gratitude instead of just living in the muckety muck.
Yeah, that makes so much sense. Like how you could still enjoy your job and be at home. You're not stressed about it. You're problem solving. What am I going to do to change this when I get back to school? Instead of just, you know, like you said, ruminating on the negative things or all those emails. Okay, well, like, what am I going to do about it instead of just sitting in it?
Yep.
Well, those were awesome little snippets of what's going on in research right now. And I like you covered a lot of different kind of scenarios with those. That was helpful. Sarah, tell me where the listeners can find you if they want to connect with you after this. And I will include all of that in the show notes. But if they're listening on the go and they want to find you after this, tell us where.
Sure. So on Instagram and Facebook, I am The Responsive Counselor. And you can also email me if this is something you're super into, sarah@theresponsivecounselor.com. And that's also my website, responsivecounselor.com.
Easy to find.
Boom.
Well, thank you for your time. I know that the listeners are going to find a lot of value in this. This is, we haven't had a topic covering this the whole time I've had my podcast since January. So I know that you brought a lot of value to the listeners. So I appreciate you.
Thank you for having me. This was fun.
Awesome. Wasn't that such a good episode? I hope you enjoyed it as much as I enjoyed recording it, because like I said, I learned so much from Sarah. If you're looking for somewhere to start collecting some data to incorporate some of that research into your school counseling program, I want you to go download my high school counseling data collection ideas guide. It has 49 different ideas for places that you can start digging for data in your school counseling program that actually probably exist already. To get that data collection ideas guide, go to counselorclick.com/data guide to download yours today. I'll see you next week. Thanks for listening to today's episode of High School Counseling Conversations. All of the links I talked about today can be found in the show notes and also at counselorclick.com/podcast. Be sure to hit follow or subscribe wherever you listen to your podcast so that you never miss a new episode. Connect with me over on Instagram. Send me a DM at counselorclick. That's CLIQUE. Thanks so much for hanging out with me. I'll see you next time.